Mayfly time is the pinnacle for most brown trout anglers, and we're pleased to announce our next Ireland on the Fly Masterclass is focusing on mayfly tactics with international angler, guide and renowned fly tyer Jackie Mahon.
On Thursday the 25th of April at 8 p.m, Jackie will be discussing how to make the most of the conditions, the best flies and methods to use, as well as giving his tips and insights from a lifetime of experience.
So, to join us for this masterclass on Thursday 25th of April, just go to www.irelandonthefly.com/masterclass. Tickets cost €10 and all attendees will get a copy of Jackie's notes as well as access to the recording of the webinar afterwards.
And stay tuned for our masterclasses throughout 2024, covering salmon, rivers, lochs, streamers, lures, dries, everything to make you a better salmon or trout fly angler, helping you to catch more this year and to learn from the best. For more information, email us on info@irelandonthefly.com.
Hello and welcome to the Ireland on the Fly podcast about the people and places of fly fishing in Ireland. For this week's episode, I speak to Monica Hayes, who has produced a six-part radio documentary series for KCLR called Make Way for the King. It is a documentary series that not only informs and motivates, but also calls for action in protecting and conserving the salmon population in the River Nore. Monica spoke to scientists about the future of our iconic fish, and also captured the memories of days gone by from local gillies and anglers, whom you'll also hear from in this podcast episode. Make Way for the King is a documentary of interest not just to salmon anglers, but to those worried about protecting the fish. And I first asked Monica about how her own interest in the story came about.
I have no background in salmon, no background in fishing. The idea came about, I work as a project program producer within KCLR. I'm always having an eye out and an ear open to projects that we can get funding for. And this came, we got information about this NASCO project through another state agency. And I suppose I put on my thinking cap, thought about what we could do and what we could deliver, given the fact that we have our wonderful River Nore flowing through Kilkenny. I suppose I also have an interest in conservation and in nature. So from there, I put together a pitch for an idea, which was, I suppose, supported and given, I got given advice about it from Professor Ken Whelan, who is a salmon expert here in Ireland. And he has contributed a lot as well to the themes and the topics of the six programmes.
And actually, we'll hear from Ken actually in a minute, talking about the, I suppose, the historical background to the salmon and the Nore. But like a good journalist you are, you know, you come up with an idea, you see there's a potential for a scope for this idea. What I think is remarkable as well is that you developed into a six-part series. So it wasn't just a one-off documentary. A huge amount of work. I know myself, having done documentaries and worked in radio, six-parter is a lot of work got into it.
Yeah, there's a lot of work. And I suppose it is and has been quite daunting to fill those. It's each program is 2 hours, so to fill 6 2-hour programs with salmon, you know, it is daunting to do that. At the same time, I'm being really surprised at how easy it is to do it too, because people have a huge passion for, first of all, the river, and second of all, salmon. And that is really lovely to see, to witness and to hear then in the programs. So and then also through connections, you know, I would ring one person and they would say, oh, you need to talk to somebody else. Somebody else has this story. And from there, then my contacts grew and are keeping on growing now as the programs progress.
So what are the 6 episodes covering?
So we start off with a look at memories of the old times of salmon fishing on the Nore when salmon were plentiful. A bit of nostalgia and a bit of history. And then we delve in the second program, we look at actually the salmon themselves, their life cycle on the Nore, their spawning habits. We touch a little bit on the importance of water quality and habitat. And we also keep an eye and an ear out to the anglers and what gear they use, you know, the tying of flies, the lines and the nets and the rods. I suppose the beauty of these programs is that there's a whole range of different contributors. Like, we have anglers, we have scientists, we have historians. There's also community activists and state agencies also, people representing state agencies also involved in it. So there's a lovely range of voices and stories because of that. Going forward, we touch on, as you know, the number of salmon in our rivers has plummeted over the years. And that's a major concern. And I suppose the origins of this program series is to look at that. So we look at, you know, global warming, the impact of pollution, overfishing in the Atlantic Ocean, some of these things that are happening that are causing the number of salmon to decrease and to come back to our rivers. And then the last program then, I suppose, ties into the name of the program series, Make Way for the King. We kind of look at, well, how can we make way for the king? The salmon is the king of the fish. How can we do more to make way for it? What can we as individuals in our small way do to make sure that the numbers of salmon are conserved and that they keep coming back to our rivers?
Sounds incredible, Monica, and you've covered so many bases there, and really there is so much. And I think what's important in terms of what you said there is the fact that it's not just anglers you were speaking to. It was conservation, it was environmental, it was scientists, it was state agencies. And, you know, you don't have to be a fly angler or into fishing to appreciate the salmon, especially in terms of their endangered position within the ecosystem at the moment. So I think this will definitely be of interest just beyond just salmon anglers themselves. Were you surprised at anything that you learned from it, I suppose, because you were kind of coming in at it from an outsider's perspective, but were you shocked at kind of how endangered they are looking to the future?
I am, and I feel kind of a sadness about it. What sticks in my head, I guess, from conversations with the anglers and with the scientists, with Professor Ken Whelan in particular, I've learned, you know, that salmon are a key indicator species, and they're showing us like what's happening in the ocean, what's happening in our environment. And, you know, they're suffering, you know, they're maybe coming back with disease, but they're also coming back in smaller numbers. And if that's what's happening to the salmon, then what's happening to the other creatures in the ocean, and what ultimately will happen to us as a human race? So I think, you know, there's a reason why, you know, in mythology and in not just mythology in Ireland, but in mythology all over the world, the salmon always play a part in that. And our salmon of knowledge story is quite significant in that, you know, the salmon are giving us knowledge and giving us information that we should pay heed to, and maybe we should take time to look at our own actions and how it's impacting on global warming and on the environment.
I think that's a really nice way of putting it, actually. Yeah, because obviously traditionally there was the salmon and knowledge, but like you said, they're still giving us the knowledge, maybe not in the kind of practical sense of food and sustenance now, but they are very much kind of the canary in the coal mine in many respects in terms exactly of what's going to the future. Obviously, Casey Lore, it's Kilkenny and Carlow on the River Nor. There's a big history of salmon fishing there on the River Nor. You spoke to Ken Whelan about the kind of tradition and kind of how far back the actual presence of salmon is in the Nor in the area, didn't you?
We did. Once again, like, we were so lucky to have him as a part of the series. And he contextualized to us and for us and for our listeners just how long the salmon have been coming to our rivers, you know. And he also went on to kind of reflect, as I've just been talking about, the significance of salmon in cultures all over the world. And I suppose it's due to their longevity in our waters that we really need to take time and put in an effort to conserve them.
Well, let's have a listen to Professor Whelan explaining the kind of long tradition of the salmon in the north.
Yeah, the salmon, not alone in the north, but the salmon in Ireland have been around for at least 10,000 years. But a very interesting thing about the Nore, the Barrow and the Shore is the fact that genetically they are very, very, very special. And we think that they were perhaps some of the very first salmon to colonise rivers in Ireland because their genetics is just so different. And we know that fish like char, which is a lovely, colourful fish that we have in some of our lakes left over from the Ice Age, trout and salmon, started to nose into these rivers about 14,000 years ago. And we think some of the earlier inquisitive fish probably came by us here in Thomastown. So I think that's a fantastic note to begin things, to think that we're looking back all those years. And our job really now is to protect and conserve this absolutely fantastic creature.
So Professor Ken Whelan there explaining the kind of long tradition of salmon in the Nore. But Monica, did you find though a lot of the time when you're kind of delving into salmon fishing, a lot of it was in the past tense, in the sense of memories from the anglers, you know, talking about the good old days?
Yeah, and anglers love to talk about the good old days. You know, our programme would have ended at 6 o'clock on that Tuesday evening, but like they were still there. It was an outside broadcast. They were still there at 6:30, gathered together on the wall, socially distanced, but chatting away about the old times and their memories of salmon fishing. We were lucky to have the likes of Eddie Cody, whose father worked the big net in Inishtig, and he talked about, you know, the significance of the salmon within the local economy as regards generating money for the people in the village, and how the salmon then would have been collected by an exporter from New Ross, who would have sent the salmon to London via Rosslare to be there the next day at the fish markets. Like, I find it very hard to put my mind into those times now, given the fact that I wouldn't be able to see a salmon in the river, and I know other anglers would have the same difficulty because their numbers are so few. I suppose we were lucky as well to connect with there was a lot of landed gentry living around Thomastown and Inishtig, and they kind of played a huge role in the fishing enterprise as well. The McCalmonts and Mount Juliet and the Tai family in Inishtig, so they kind of controlled the fishing and the river. So we also had Joe Dunphy, who was a former school principal in Ballyhale in County Kilkenny, and his father worked with the McCalmonts, and he had some great stories as well from those days.
Let's have a listen to Joe's memories there.
My father and my grandfather were both fishermen in Mount Juliet in the estate. They were the fishermen there back in the 20s, 30s, before I was born, actually. And, of course, my father fished up practically up to the day he died, you know.
And when you say they were the fishermen in the estate, what exactly did that mean?
Well, they were working for the McCalmont estate as fishermen. They worked, say, as gillies. When McCalmonts wanted salmon, they just told them to go out and get them. And I talked to a lady there one time who was working in the house, and she'd asked my father, "There's somebody coming today, we need a salmon." And his answer invariably was, "Sure, no problem, what size?" Not nowadays, you wouldn't get that.
It is incredible, isn't it, Monica? Like the kind of the rich history. I know myself, having done a few documentaries, that it's a bit of a gold mine, I think, in terms of the rich cultural past. And it's crying out to be recorded and kept for posterity's sake, because it's changed so much. I'm fascinated by Shem Caulfield talking about the different boats and the cot racing. You might just talk about a bit about that.
Yeah, like, I'm no expert now on the river and on salmon fishing, but I do know that each river seemed to have its own type of boat from which they'd fish the salmon from. And these boats were called cots. They'd work in pairs, and there'd be a net between them, and the fishermen would use that net then to catch up the fish. Shem Caulfield, he's a Thomastown man. He's really involved in all things to do with the river. And a few years ago, he would have got funding to build a replica cot, and he did a lot of research in order to do that project on cots, and discovered the link between those cot boats that were fishing, but also then racing cots. Racing cots became very popular in the Victorian ages, and there used to be great regattas on the River Nore, like over the years, which would have brought fierce competition seemingly to families and communities around the place. And he told us a lot about that, and it was fascinating.
There's a whole tradition, as you know, of boats that are indigenous to the various rivers, and there's a great tome produced for rivers in Ireland, and it'll show you just a vast range of boats that were developed locally for particular rivers. And the cot, or the Nore cot, is 19 to 21 foot long, pointed both ends. In recent years now, there have been cutbacks. They've cut and put a transom on for an outboard. And there's again a huge tradition that's lost here now of racing, particularly in the late Victorian era here. And some fantastic competitions where you had teams from the UK coming over here to challenge the very best of us. But I just tell you one, like, I did a bit of research in terms of some of the great boats of the time, the great racing boats, and they'd be developed from the competitions between fishermen the whole way from Thomastown down to Ross and further on down as far as Waterford. And some of the great, the names were the Duranon, the Green Diver, right, the Nore Lass, all of those. And on the shore as well, you had, great boat builders along there. But I don't know if you remember the great Dotty Power had his birthday, 104.
I surely did. He was in the Irish Times.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah.
Doing good.
Well, Dotty, he was parked up there a few years ago, and you know, Dotty has a fantastic memory. He was parked up on the Market Street there one day, so I said I'd try him out, and I tapped the window, and he said, "Well, young Caulfield," and I said, "The Duranon, the Green Diver." Round the arse feckin' things, he said, you couldn't stay in them. And he knew immediately what they were. He said he greased the bottoms of them above at Ireland's Inch back in the 30s or 40s, you know. So that tradition and that racing tradition was very, very strong. They say at the Pink Rock, at the turn of the last century now.
That's halfway between here and Inisteig, isn't it?
No, the Pink Rock now would be...
not the Fourpenny Rock is what I'm thinking of, yeah.
There was up to 40,000 people at a regatta there, which is a huge number.
That's down where the new bridge is now.
Yeah, down about there, yeah, at that. So, as I said, the Victorians were big into their outdoor sport, rowing, paddling, all of that. And cot racing really took off.
Coming out of that, Monica, drift nets was obviously another issue that you kind of explored. And people maybe forget about kind of what a big role they played and then how contentious they were at the time. Maybe just give me a bit of background to that.
Yeah, I suppose I have memories going back 20 years ago where I had just seen placards around the place, you know, that said "Stop drift netting now and save our salmon." And that period of time was recalled as well during the programme. Sue had done an interview with a local fisherman in 1991. His name was Ned Ryan, and he was an angler and an activist. And he was well before his time in what he had to say, you know, about drift nets, and about how like wonderful the salmon were to be able to still continued to come back to the river at that time, despite all the obstacles that were in their course, in their way, in making their way back down. And she would always love the line that he says at the end, that they deserve a medal, those salmon, and we should really protect them.
Let's have a listen to that fascinating clip of Ned Ryan from 1991.
I recommend that drift netting have to be either curtailed or scrapped completely. There's no law or order down on the western seaboard, down into Kerry. They don't even bother buying a licence now. They're supposed to fish with 40-foot boats. They get a licence for a small boat. They go to a 60-foot one. There's about 1,500 miles of monofilament up in Donegal. That's the first thing the salmon meets after coming off of the, out of the Faroe, at the feeding ground. They meet 1,500 miles of monofilament. It's the Donegal Wall. And from there then down to Kerry, it's ruthless game. And how they get down is a miracle. In fact, the other two get down should be decorated. So they should some kind of a medal for a man. They definitely shouldn't be killed. Hopefully someday we'll wake up to the idea and stop this. But we're the only country in the world now really have salmon, plenty. And we're the only country in a position to maintain and increase that. And it's a wonderful thing to have to say. You have this wonderful fish, the king of fish, actually. As you said, a golden fish, as he has. And he is gold now because he's golden. And the sooner they wake up and do something about it. I mean, after all, I don't want to deprive anybody of a living. But then again, nobody's entitled to destroy any species, whether to be frogs or ghosts or foxes or you name it. Or badgers from the ghost of that. There's nobody entitled to destroy any species. We should hand over our state to our children, the same as our grandfathers and our grandparents did down through the years, hand it over to us. We should hand it over the same to our children and our future generation. And hopefully, said before, that somebody somewhere along the line will wake up to it and say, enough is enough.
Just on the drift nets, Monica, Professor Ken Whelan then had a lot to say on this as well.
He did. Professor Ken Whelan took up on that. I mean, it was a very politically fraught situation and a debate, and he expanded on that along with Bobby Wims as well, who was also very active at the time in Thomastown in wanting to ban the drift nets, which they were successful in doing.
The campaigning started in 2003. It was the first. Thanks to Ken and some of the other scientists, we now had a rationale as to why drift nets should go. I mean, there was suddenly a logical reason as to why guys out of sea couldn't indiscriminately catch fish that were going to rivers that had full of salmon, but also rivers that had very little salmon. So the only way to stop that, to protect the species in the endangered rivers, was to stop the whole thing. And that started the campaign, and it lasted 4 years, four tough years, and we were up against 888 drift net licences.
And politics.
And but the science won out. Europe won out to a large extent, and we were just—we had enormous support from anglers, and particularly anglers, I suppose, but generally people who just felt that salmon was worthwhile preserving.
Why was it that so many drift net licences were given out in the 1960s? It wasn't just by chance, and I think, as scientists, I think maybe we've a little bit to add to the story, because only relatively recently we began to understand the kind of numbers of fish that were at sea and how these vary. And there is no doubt about it. I first came across it when my dad came home and told us that they were selling salmon in the local chipper, and the salmon was cheaper than cod. And that was in the early 1960s. And our science backs that up, because in the early 1960s there was an incredible survival of salmon at sea. And we now know that coming back to the Irish coast at that time, there was somewhere in the region of between 1 million and 1.5 million salmon coming back to the Irish coast. So there was actually an enormous surplus of salmon coming back to these wonderful salmon factories that were producing them. And of course, the politicians then realised that there was a few votes in this. And they started then to give out drift net licences like confetti. But a lot of people that got drift net licences were people with professions. So there was army officers, there was Gardaí, all sorts of people got these drift net licences. But the reason for that was because of the surplus. But as the numbers of fish started to drop, of course there was no sign of the numbers of nets dropping. So that's when it became really seriously problematic.
Just finally, Monica, in terms of the overall series, do you get it? Do you think there's a certain maybe appreciation, maybe more of the Nore overall within the kind of cultural historic environmental landscape within the region, you know, that you get an appreciation of it from a past perspective, but also then how important it still is for the future.
Yeah, I think so. When you look back at the history of the river, you know, it was, you know, maybe years and years ago, it was looked on as a sacred space. There would be loads of monks and hermits set up along the river, and they'd look at that as a prime location for their own spiritual advancement. And then it kind of came a highway for trade and for economics, and there was lots of mills and weirs set up on it, the weirs to catch the fish or the eels or whatever. And now it's like we use it, I guess, more so for recreation purposes. And, you know, maybe fish, only a few might fish on it, but, you know, maybe use it for canoeing or other water sports. I think that it, over the years, has been ignored a little bit by people. I think, though, more and more that people recognize how important water is and good, clean water is to not just the creatures in the river, but also to their own health. So I hope that this program series will also then go on to reaffirm that and to go a little bit in reconnecting people to water and to nature again, and of course ultimately as well to the salmon, who are so at risk and vulnerable at the moment in the river.
No, you're so right. I live in Tipperary, and you know, I'd often be driving through Kilkenny, and it always strikes me, especially if it's the weekend, you're driving through Kilkenny and you drive over the river, over the bridge, and you know, the restaurants and bars, well, this was pre-COVID obviously, would be packed and people would be out and about, and you kind of wonder, you know, the city grew up around the river, you know, it gave such sustenance to people. And now we've kind of, we took rivers for granted. Now there's obviously a lot more awareness of how important they are environmentally. But I still think we kind of take it for granted that it's just something that flows by. And how many people actually stop to kind of look and kind of go and appreciate what it is. The only thing I would say is I think maybe since COVID, we've nearly gotten more of an appreciation now of the outdoors and of nature and environment. So the one thing I'm hopeful maybe as a result of kind of 2020 is that there is much more of an appreciation. But the flip side of that probably is there's still less people fishing. I think it was Joe who mentioned it there, is that you hardly see anybody on the river now.
That's right. Yeah, he was afraid that he'd be dead by the river and nobody would find him. And that is a struggle with a lot of the angling clubs would also say that they have no young members to keep that club going. And I guess, you know, what I've come to realize is that the anglers are the people who have the interests of the fish and what's in the river at their hearts as well. And they're the ones that would know what's going on and have that connection to it. So it's important that young people do engage with it and, you know, take up that mantle of guardianship that the anglers and the angling clubs have at the moment.
Well, Monica, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you. The series, it's an incredible piece of work, 6-part series called Make Way for the King. It's on KCLR. It can be listened to, is it every week on KCLR96FM.com, is it?
Yes. If you look up our website, you'll find all the programmes will be uploaded to the Make Way for the King webpage. So each Wednesday, we'll have each new programme uploaded to there. So you can listen back to it there. And I hope that people will enjoy it.
Salmon anglers definitely will. And, you know, they'll definitely appreciate it in terms of the stories, you know, from what you've heard in terms of people's memories. But like we said, it's also the bigger picture here in terms of the environment and the future of the fish is what's being addressed as well. So definitely check it out. It's on KCLR96FM.com. And Monica Hayes, congratulations for producing an incredible 6-part series.
Thank you very much, Dara. And I just want to say a thank you to the presenter of the programme, who's Sue Nunn, who's doing a fabulous job with her enthusiasm and interest in the programme series and her lovely engagement with her contributors. And she's really enhancing the programme with all those attributes. So thank you to Sue as well.
My thanks to Monica Hayes for joining me on the show. And to listen to the series, just go to KCLR96FM.com. Don't forget to rate, review and subscribe to the Ireland on the Fly podcast on Apple, Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts from.
You can also keep up to date on IrelandOnTheFly.com as well as on Instagram. And I'll be back with another episode about the people and places of fly fishing in Ireland. Mayfly time is the pinnacle for most brown trout anglers, and we're pleased to announce our next Ireland on the Fly Masterclass is focusing on mayfly tactics with international angler, guide and renowned fly tyer Jackie Mann.
On Thursday the 25th of April at 8 p.m, Jackie will be discussing how to make the most of the conditions, the best flies and methods to use, as well as giving his tips and insights from a lifetime of experience.
So, to join us for this masterclass on Thursday, 25th of April, just go to www.irelandonthefly.com/masterclass. Tickets cost €10 and all attendees will get a copy of Jackie's notes as well as access to the recording of the webinar afterwards.
And stay tuned for our masterclasses throughout 2024, covering salmon, rivers, lochs, streamers, lures, dries, everything to make you a better salmon or trout fly angler, helping you to catch more this year and to learn from the best. For more information, email us on info@irelandonthefly.com.